Hello and welcome to episode 3 of the Poolside Pass podcast. Thank you to everyone that tuned in to episodes 1 and 2 of the series so far, with Kevin Pickard talking about talent and also Rick Hall talking about technical models and his projects that he's been doing whilst he's had a bit of time away from the pool. Over the next 6 weeks, we're going to be speaking to coaches with a little bit of an Olympic theme. Coaches that are either currently coaching swimmers that are going to be racing at this year's Summer Olympic Games, or coaches that have played a part in the age group development of swimmers that are competing at this year's Olympic Games. On today's show, we welcome back Russ Barber. If you haven't heard the first episode we recorded with Russ in November 2019, then make sure you go and check that out on your whatever you usually listen to your podcasts on. Back then, we spoke about Russ's coaching philosophy. Today, we're going to be diving into talking about high performance cultures, developing those cultures within club programs, something which Russ has direct experiences doing. So I think it's about time we got into the episode. Russ Barber, welcome back. How are you?
Yeah, really good, thank you. Nice to speak to you again.
Good. So, we spoke, this is actually the third time we've recorded something, because I think I came to Sheffield and then something happened in my personal life, which meant I'd lost that recording. And then we met up again, I think it was on Skype, to re-record that one. That was released about 18 months ago.
Wow, was it that long ago? Wow.
Yeah, it seems like it was yesterday, but
it does, doesn't it?
Since then, I guess there has been a global pandemic. So Russ, why don't you just start by giving us a quick update on what you're up to now with your coaching?
Yeah, well, the whole world's changed, hasn't it? It's crazy right now. Yeah, well, last year, because of the financial difficulties created by the pandemic, unfortunately, I had to take redundancy from my position in Sheffield, which was a bit of a blow, because I've been there 19 years, and obviously I was working with a group of athletes towards the Olympic trials, and so it's always hard to walk away from that sort of situation. But I suppose you've got two options, haven't you? You know, you can either, you know, curl up in a corner and feel sorry for yourself, or you just get on with things, you know. So I put my heart and soul back into the a little side project, you know, which is called the Swim Coach Network, where I invite people on to talk about, you know, key things, and you know, that's built up to quite a good degree now. And and then just in the last few months, I've started working with British Triathlon, with the performance squad there at Leeds, and also I've become director of coaching at Kingston upon Hull Swimming Club. So it's kind of back to my roots again now. So I'm busier than ever and absolutely loving it.
Good, great to hear that you're back into some kind of coaching, because you know, I think every coach listening to this podcast can relate to what it's like, you know, spending, you know, every day at the pool or coaching regularly, and then, you know, not being able to coach for a period of time after everything everyone's been through recently. So
it's strange. I think so many of us kind of our lives are dictated by the hours that we work, aren't they? And that type of thing. So when we don't have that control, and we just kind of sat around thinking, oh, what am I meant to do now? You know, I guess I'll have to paint the fence again. You know? Oh, actually, I haven't got a fence. Right, I better make a fence so I can paint it. Yeah, that'll do. Yeah. So that was my approach for a lot of the lockdown.
Great. So today we're gonna speak about developing performance cultures within a club environment.
Yeah.
So let's start by taking a look at what you would consider like a performance mindset or a performance culture within swimming.
Yeah, I mean, I think, there's so many ways of doing it, isn't there? You know, if you look at, the people that have had successful situations, I'm not talking about perhaps, you know, somebody who's just had one good swimmer, because that could just be the talent of the swimmer. You know, I mean, I think sometimes as coaches, we like to give ourselves, and you know, why not give ourselves a pat on the back for a job well done when we have one good athlete. But I think in order to have a succession of athletes over a number of years and a number of events, you know, that's when we start talking about the importance of a culture and the environment that that you create. And I don't say that lightly, because I do think it's down to us to create that environment. And, you know, because I think there are a lot of people that talk about it, but they don't actually know what it really feels like to work in a truly performance environment. And I think, you know, it's really challenging in a club situation, but I still really believe strongly that it's doable. And I think, you know, what we're talking about here is looking at what we know is a performance situation, a pure performance situation, or no compromise, hardworking, hustling, performance minded situation. I think probably a lot of us would be able to write a page on what that looks like. You know, that's not rocket science, I don't think. I think the real skill comes and the difficulty comes in how many compromises we have got to make from that pure coaching effort and from that performance environment, because the situation we're in as club coaches very much is, you know, dictated to by committees, by, you know, facilities, you know, by external pressures, by funding, that type of thing. And so I think what we've got to do, and what I try and do, and my mindset always is to remind myself of what the perfect performance situation is. And you can, you know, you can read that in any book, right? It's not, yeah, it's not difficult. And then look at my own situation that I'm in and make sure that every single stone is turned, you know, and every area that is taken away from that perfect coaching situation is challenged. And, you know, sometimes you've got to bulldoze through those problems. Sometimes you've got to circumvent them. Sometimes you've got to be crafty, you know, but by hook or by crook, we've all got to find a way to make sure that there's as few filters and as few compromises from that perfect coaching situation that most of us really know, but not all of us can create, you know?
So the thing that struck me there was, you know, you think about your ideal situation. Yeah. And then you think about what's your non-negotiable situation. Absolutely. What's your minimum kind of environment expectations needed to create that culture? So what would your non-negotiables be for that?
I think it's just whatever it needs to be. And I know that sounds a bit vague, but I think, you know, every situation that you're in is different, you know, and so I would say that the non-negotiables that I have now, right now, in the situation that I'm in now, right now, with the triathletes and with Hull, would be different to what my non-negotiables were at Sheffield, you know. So I think, you know, you've got to be able to assess the situation that you're in, and really challenge those areas. I mean, certainly in terms of, you know, there are certain things, you know, that I always bang on about. I mean, the whole, you know, for those of you that remember when I was at Sheffield, we always used to talk about Team Steel, and there was that word Team Steel bandied about. And that was something that we came up with 10 or 12 years ago when, you know, I was trying to, I guess, come up with some sort of slogan and some kind of thing that we could all get behind, you know, because when I went to across to America a few times, you know, they were so good at that, you know, they had a nickname for the team. So the University of Texas is the Longhorns, and they've all got the Longhorn sign and the Longhorns chants, and in the locker rooms is Longhorns everywhere. And it's something that you can just really get behind. And I really liked that whole concept. And obviously the key thing with that is making sure that it's not just a skin deep thing. You know, that it is actually, you know, you really, really do believe in what that stands for. And so a while ago, you know, when I came up with the whole Team Steel thing, it was, you know, to try and create a mindset within the swimmers and to create an environment at Sheffield that had my non-negotiables at that time that I felt really strongly about. And it's really, really interesting that over time, you know, of, as the years progressed, there was a lot of young kids coming through the program that would like to turn around and say, "Yay, I'm Team Steel," and "Way," you know, but they had actually no real clue of what that meant and what that was all about. And so I actually wrote a document, a little document on that, you know, to make sure that we had a real clear understanding of what that was. And did, I don't know if you want me to share a couple of those points, but certainly I think there's six key ingredients that go into it, to what I really believe, and I guess what my non-negotiables are. The first thing is fearless work ethic. You know, I think, you know, you've got to be able to turn around and say, I will do whatever I need to do and train as hard as I possibly can to be competitive or to be the best, and not compromise on that. Mm-hmm. You know, so there needs to be a fearless work ethic. I think that's really important. And obviously that what goes along with that is the 100% in mindset.
Yeah.
So we don't want a situation, do we, where people turn around and say, yeah, I want to be Team Steel, I want to be the best. Oh, but I can't make next Thursday because I'm doing a football match, and I can't go next Tuesday because I've, you know, that's not, you know, that's not 100% in.
Yeah.
And so my whole mindset with that was, you know, if you come up to me and tell me that you want me to help you achieve your goals, whatever that is, you know, whether that's, you know, Yorkshire champion or whether that's Olympic champion, whatever it is, then once we've made the plan, we're 100% in. You know, there's other places you can go where you can compromise and miss the obsession and that type of stuff. But if you want to work with me and you want to work with my program, then you're 100% in, you know? Yeah. And an example of that was, I can remember 2 or 3 years ago on deck, you know, the way that the lads like to banter. And one of the lads said, oh, well, I'm Russ's favourite in this squad because, you know, I've only missed 2 sessions this year. And then another lad turns around and said, no, I'm Russ's favourite. I only missed one. And then this other athlete came up and said, no, I must be the best because I haven't missed any sessions. And so at which point I picked up on it and said, wow, you haven't missed any sessions this year. And this athlete said, no, I've never missed a session since I came into your squad in 2008. And that was Ellie Faulkner.
Wow.
And so that's how a little 5'4", 50-kilogram little thing like Ellie was able to go to 2 Olympics and get Commonwealth record games, medals and all that type of stuff. You know, it was because from 2008, and this at this point, this conversation happened in 2017. So she'd been in my squad for 9 years at that point, had never missed a session.
Wow.
So, you know, that's 9 years of 9 or 10 sessions a week. And I questioned her on it, and I said, you know, and because I thought about, well, there's been times when she might have missed a session, but she always made it up. You know, she'd come and do an extra morning or, you know, she'd find another way to make it up. So that's what I mean about the 100% in.
Yeah.
You know, and that it's doable in a club environment. You know, and so that's a big one. The third one I really believe in is making champions' choices. You know, so obviously, you know, right from the start, we need to say to our athletes, look, you can't be like a normal kid on the street and do normal kid on the street things, and then still turn around and say you want to be an Olympian or you want to be an Olympic medalist.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You just can't. You've got to be prepared to make those sacrifices and make champions' choices. And not just when I'm there as well. You know, you've got to live the life, you know, and it's got to be 24/7, you know, because ultimately, you know, they're only with us for 3 or 4 hours a day, aren't they?
Yeah.
And what happens in the other 20-odd hours really counts. And so that's a big thing as well. I put down coachability, that, you know, the need to be able to take instruction and to take challenge and not spit the dummy out if you challenge them, and be able to make changes as well. You know, when I think about the Olympians that I've coached, they're the ones that if you tell them to do something, they'll do it first time and you'll never have to tell them again.
Yeah.
You know, or if you do need to tell them again, they'll just work at it 100%.
Yeah.
You know, which is really important. I think resilience is really important, you know, being able to, you know, to bounce back, you know, and you know, because obviously everyone gets injuries, everyone has problems. But you've got to be resilient and be able to bounce back quickly. And the last one that I put on my kind of team steel list was respect, humility, and honesty. And I think I mentioned it to you last time when we talked, but it's so important because, for example, I picked Ellie out of swimming lessons in 2001. And I coached her through to 2018.
Yeah.
So that's 17 years relationship.
Wow.
You know, so we had to learn to work together, right?
Absolutely.
You know, because if we annoyed each other or we didn't get on with each other or we didn't have mutual respect or there was dishonesty or whatever, there's no way that relationship could have lasted. You know, and so I think we've got to work at that and say, look, this is going to be a long-term relationship. We need it to work. And so there's got to be trust. There's got to be humility. There's got to be honesty. And also, the more honest the athlete is, the more chance you've got of making sure that the training that you're providing is actually appropriate.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so that's really important. And then the last thing to say on this, mate, is that, yeah, those things are all great. We can trip all those, you know, posh, you know, things off, you know, coachability, resilience. We all love trotting those things out, don't we? But the thing that really hits it home is that every single one of those things, mate, that I've mentioned in the last 5 minutes, they're all free of charge.
Yeah.
They're all behaviours, right?
Yeah,
they're all things that, you know, it's not talent-based, it's not money-based, it's nothing. We can all choose to behave like that.
They're all choices.
And so to me, if you're saying to me, what is a performance mindset? Well, it's when you're choosing to make those behaviours happen.
Yeah.
You know, you're choosing to do that. And ultimately, you know, the difference between who we are now and the level that we're at now and who we want to be, our target, where the target is that we want to be, our goal is making sure that you're making the right choices today. You know, not leaving it. You know, don't think, right, in 6 years' time, I'm going to be like Michael Phelps. No, you're not. You know, if you turn around and say, today, I'm going to be like Michael Phelps, then you've got half a chance in 6 years of maybe being there.
Yeah. Right?
And so, you know, that was kind of like the mindset of the early days at Sheffield, how we turn things around. And obviously as coaches, and not just coaches, but anybody involved in the organization, you know, the, you know, timekeepers and officials and all the people that might be hanging around on deck, you know, we all had to have that same narrative, that same mantra, you know, to make sure that, you know, the kids and the swimmers and the athletes, that just was brought up in that mindset and they lived and breathed it, you know? And that's probably gives you a little bit of an insight into how we created what we did at Sheffield.
So once you've got your six non-negotiables that you just read off there.
Yeah.
How would you or how would your organization go about in making sure that's instilled within the program, within the swimmers at every step of the way? Yeah. Because, you know, you'd have swimmers coming into your program from Learn to Swim. You want to be kind of laying the foundations as they go through your program. So when they get to the top squad, you know, they're almost displaying those non-negotiables so that you don't have to develop them when they're there.
Yeah, it's interesting because the kids that came through the program, by the time they got to me, most of that was already instilled. You know, so now in the early days, when I first went into Sheffield, I had to jump up and down and foam at the mouth and get upset and, you know, make sure that, you know, really try and change the direction, you know, because for a lot of people, it was a new concept, you know, and, you know, but by the time I'd been there a few years, and one of the lucky things at Sheffield is that all of my assistant coaches were all my ex-swimmers after a while. And so because of that, the mindset that I instilled in my swimmers then was instilled on deck because a lot of my coaches had that same mindset, you know? So that really helped. But the main difficulty came that maybe 50% of the senior swimmers at Sheffield came from the outside, you know, came from another club or came to university and may or may not have had that same set of non-negotiables. Now, interestingly, the swimmers that came from the great clubs that we know about, you know, when I got swimmers coming in from places like Stockport or places like Leeds, you know, those great clubs that have been really successful for a lot of years, the kids just slotted in because they had the same non-negotiables. You know, it was just part of the mindset. But quite often when talented swimmers came from programs that perhaps weren't switched on when it came to, you know, the behaviors and that kind of elite mindset, sometimes there was a little bit of butting of heads and it took a little bit of period of time to do that. But there's no two ways around it. You know, you've got to sit down and explain it, and you've got to have team meetings, and you've got to, right from day one, have parents meetings and explain to the parents what it's all about, and that we're not just talking about athleticism here, that we're talking about character, and that we're trying to develop character, and that I need them to support me with that. You know, and so it started right at the very start. So when the kids come in from swimming lessons, we have parents meetings, we have squad meetings, we talk about these things, we talk about the importance of behaviors, and that it's not just about turning up 3, 4, 10 whatever times a week. And then when athletes came from another club, it'd be a case of, you know, sitting down with them and explaining this type of thing to them and saying, look, turning up to all the sessions and training out is just 50% of the deal here. You know, the other 50% is you know, bringing your energy to the poolside and bringing the and making sure that you're working with these within these non-negotiables. And some, you know, sometimes we've had to remove people from the program. You know, I will try and dress it up. You know, people that perhaps weren't prepared to put that level of discipline, personal discipline in. But you know, 9 times out of 10, people did buy into it because they recognised it was successful, and you know, but really, that's how we did it. Yeah, yeah.
So, you mentioned there in terms of, I think you mentioned having, you know, butting of heads, you know, having to get buy-in from people and dealing with those people that maybe failed to meet those standards and failed to meet those non-negotiables. How would you go about kind of overcoming those challenges?
I mean, you know, you can lead, you know, that old saying about leading, you know, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink, you know. Yeah. I think, you know, what we've got to get really, really good at as coaches is leading the athletes to the water, you know, for want of a better word, you know, in that we've got to teach them, you know, what our non-negotiables are. And I suspect that most of us will have very similar non-negotiables.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can't imagine that your list is very different to mine. Probably when I was reading them out, you was probably thinking, that's what I said. That's it. You know, and, you know, probably most of mine I've nicked from somebody else as well. You know, I'm not trying to make out that I'm some sort of guru. But I think, you know, all you can do is spend time. I think squad meetings are really important. You know, I think it's important to take the athletes away from the training environment sometimes, and you know, sit down and talk, you know, and talk about why these behaviours are important, why they're important to you, and ultimately why they should buy into them. And quite a lot of the time, you know, some of those things, I guess out of those 6 things, probably 3 or 4 of them are the ones that were my non-negotiables that I put on the list. But 2 or 3 of them certainly came from the athletes themselves, you know, from team meetings, where I've said to them, you know, what is it that you want? You know, what is it that you think is going to make a difference in the squad? You know, and certainly, you know, the 100% in mindset and the work ethic and stuff like that, you know, that is often what the swimmers turn around and say, you know, say, well, I want everyone to work hard. I, you know, if I'm coming here and working hard, I don't want somebody in my lane who's not.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's... You know, so certainly when you're lucky enough to have a senior squad like I have and had at Sheffield, a lot of those things are driven by the athletes. And if it's not driven by the athletes, then you're going to have a pretty torrid time because you're going to be the guy jumping up and down on the poolside saying, why aren't you doing what you should be doing? You know,
yeah.
So you've got to spend time educating your athletes and coming to a consensus about what your group's mindset and environment and non-negotiables, however you want to dress it up, is, so that all you've got to do is remind them of what they've agreed to, not trying to change, you know, trying to change the course of a tanker that don't want to change. you know, because that's always going to end in failure. Because one thing's going to happen, or two things are going to happen. You'll leave or they'll leave, right?
Yeah.
You know, so you've got to make sure that you get them on board, you know, to make sure there's that buy-in from all parties, really.
So I guess in a big program like you had at Sheffield, where you produced, you know, international athletes year on year, you know, you had swimmers go to Olympic Games. You also, I guess, you know, not every swimmer is going to be an international athlete. Not every swimmer is going to be, you know, performance quality. How does a coach leading that kind of program ensure that the club still looks after those swimmers that are non-elite? Because, you know, they're important to the functioning of a club like that, right?
Absolutely. But none of those things that I've talked about there, mate, are anything to do with performance.
True.
They're all behaviours.
Yeah.
You know, and so the point I'm making to you is that those behaviours would be whether you're a Yorkshire qualifier or whether you're an Olympic champion. You know, and so I think it's our role as coaches. I mean, of course, you know, I'd be lying if I told you that I didn't have one eye on my Olympians, just making sure they did everything right on every session. You know, that I had the other eye for perhaps six athletes, you know. so it's kind of like, you know, I think we're all a little bit like that. But I think in terms of making sure that you've got the mindset and the non-negotiables in place, that applies to everybody, you know. And, you know, unfortunately, over the years, I've had to, you know, remove three or four GB international level swimmers from my program because they wouldn't buy into those non-negotiables, and all you need is one little bit of toxic mindset like that, and it can do irreparable damage to your squad. And so you really do have to jump on those things from a great height, you know, when you see those behaviours breaking down, you know. And what I would say is that, you know, if you're looking at a swim set and you see that the technique is deteriorating, a good coach would stop that set and challenge that and try and put that technique right and carry on and hurt, you know, and make sure, you know, you wouldn't allow a swimmer to bash out a terrible swim set. And for me, it's just as vitally important that when you see that those behaviours are starting to break down, as they do at times, that you stop and you take stock and you put things right, you know, because one doesn't work with the other. You know, you need but the training side to be right and skill based and training hard and that type of thing. But just as important is the behaviour and the environment. And I think it's us, our job as head coaches and leaders of programs, to make sure that those behaviours have been enforced, and that we're holding high standards as a real important part of what we do.
So you were in that program, you know, developing that culture for 19 years. How did you, as a leader, make sure that from season one to season 19, there was, you know, constant, continual progression within the program? Were there any years where, you know, perhaps there was a dip in that? Did it go in cycles, or was it just a linear progression through the 19 years?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, I think we all go through times, don't we, where we perhaps run out a little bit of energy, a little bit of motivation at times. And I've got to say, probably the I've had two or three, you know, if there was two or three years, perhaps, or two or three tapers that perhaps haven't gone well at Sheffield. I mean, generally speaking, you know, we did taper well and got the results that we wanted every year. But on the two or three times it hasn't worked, on reflection, it was probably when I personally, as a leader of the program, was either struggling or perhaps had maybe let my standards drop. And so I think it's really down to us to make sure that we do look ourselves in the mirror and make sure that where the standard we make sure that where the level, or that we hold the club to account in terms of the standards that we expect. And I think that the moment that we lower our standards, you know, it's very hard to expect our athletes to have 100% buy-in and 100% attention to the non-negotiables if we as individuals and leaders haven't got that. So I think that probably more often than not, when we have had the occasional dip, it's probably been down to me having an occasional dip. And so, you know, we've got to look at ourselves. We've probably got to take a little bit of time out. We've got to decompress. We've got to just remind ourselves of what our own non-negotiables and our goals and ambitions are, and reflect and kind of reset a little bit from time to time. And I do think that that's one thing that, you know, I think the narrative's changing. I think we're getting better at that. But certainly looking back a few years, you know, I think as coaches, we're terrible at that. You know, we don't look after ourselves well enough, and we don't decompress well enough. And I think that when you go past a certain level of tiredness and stress, you can no longer see it.
Mm.
Yeah, and I would say that probably, you know, the odd dip that we might have had from time to time, that will have coincided when I was the most tired and the most stressed, and so I couldn't see the bigger picture, if you got what I mean, you know. So I do think if people are struggling, I think probably it's a good idea, you know, to take a little bit of time off, you know, give your assistant some responsibility for a few days or a couple of weeks, you know, get some sleep, take some time out, and really reflect on where you're at and the kind of leadership that you're showing, you know, to the program that you're looking after. And then if you really have looked at that and you feel that actually, no, I'm okay and I am doing a good job here and it's this one isn't on me, then that's when you've got to be prepared to make tough decisions.
Mm.
And you've got to be prepared to turn around and say to certain people, you know, look, I'm happy to work with you and try and educate you with this, but your behaviours need to change.
Right.
You know, because, you know, I'm not prepared to put my time and effort into, you know, a partnership that is unbalanced, you know. And so, you know, my argument with any athlete will always be, I will reflect, you know, the commitment that you're prepared to put in. Now, as a young coach, it would be the other way around. I would turn around and say, right, I'm going to come and be this bastion of energy and positivity and drive, and I'm going to get everybody copying me. And the older I got, the more I realised, yeah, that was good to a degree, but there was a lot of people that were only doing that because they were following me or they were intimidated not to.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so what I try and do now is very much say, I will reflect the level of commitment and drive that you have. So if you want me to give you 100% world-class performance coaching, you better bring world-class performance effort and non-negotiables to me.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I will just give you what you deserve. You know, so if you bring your B game to me, cool. I'll give you my B game.
Yeah. I think it goes back to that.
If you want my A game, you better bring your A game. Otherwise, we're going to come to blows.
Goes back to that 100% in. Mm. And also, you know, we said, I think it was respect, honesty, and what was the other one?
Respect, humility, and honesty. Yeah.
It goes back to that. You know, as coaches, there's that coach-athlete relationship, there's got to be that respect. If they're going all in, we're going all in. If we're going all in, they're going all in.
Now, don't get me wrong. I do think, obviously, with younger kids, you know, you've got to lead them, you've got to guide them, you've got to show them the way, and you've got to pick them up when they fall and all that type of stuff. Don't get me wrong. You know, I think this is one of those things where the higher up the level that the athletes go, I think the more that I turn the mirror on them, you know. So I think at a young age, I absolutely am prepared to take responsibility and bring my A game and try and get them to learn from that and to gain energy and positivity and everything from that. Absolutely. But by the time, you know, by the time you've got the athletes training full time and, you know, train every session and, you know, they're pretty committed and they're at a national plus level, you know, to me, that's when things start, you need to start putting more responsibility onto them, you know, and saying, you know, why should I bring my A game? Yeah, there's going to be times when, you know, I need to pick them up and there's going to be times when they need to pick me up. But as an overall cumulative of the week or the year or the period of time that you work together, you know, you've got to reflect their commitment, you know, because I'm not gonna sit there and take responsibility for performances that may or may not be good depending on what commitment they put in.
Yeah. Yeah, I think when you go back to what you just mentioned there with the younger kids in terms of, you know, having to lead them, having to be that kind of reference point for the energy and the commitment for them. If, you know, when you've got the coaches working with the younger age groups, if they do that really well, by the time they get to that older age group, then, you know, they're ready to have the mirror turned on them because through that influence of those younger age group coaches, you know, leading them and striking that level of commitment into them, then they should be just exhibiting it naturally, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I think it comes down to the kind of, you know, in the early days, you know, it's very much coach led, isn't it? But then by the time they get to a level in the sport where there's a huge level of independence you know, where it's down to them ultimately, because we can't be in the core room for them. And, you know, when you go to a major meet, there's a point where you've got to send them on the way. You know, and so from that point on, they've got to be able to deal with that and deal with that pressure and have the right behaviours at that point. And so that's why I think it's a little bit of a, well, not a little bit, a big problem when swimmers are not given that level of responsibility, you know, and I don't think it's unreasonable to say, if you want me to bring my A game, you bring your A game.
Yeah.
I don't think it's an unreasonable expectation.
No, neither do I. I think it's just respectful, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So we spoke there briefly about kind of the role of assistant coaches or perhaps voluntary coaches, maybe a little bit kind of further down your program, working with the younger age group swimmers. A big part of any club's success is down to the work of those voluntary or, you know, part-time assistant coaches. How did you as a leader and as a director of coaching ensure that internal club coach development opportunities were offered to those coaches?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, I've been so lucky over the years to have some fantastic voluntary and assistant coaches over the years. And I can honestly say that, you know, without them, there wouldn't have been such a longevity of success. You know, I think you might have had little snippets of it, you know, but to be able to have longevity, I mean, I'll give you an example. In, you know, in big years, certainly in the lead up to the Olympics, I would often be away from Sheffield for 3 months in that year, you know, so, you know, on various training camps and holding camps and things like that. And so obviously you need to make sure that you've got assistant coaches that are maintaining the same non-negotiables and standards that you bring to the program. And so I think it's really important that all planning that you do with your assistant coaches, and so they understand your thought processes. I think it's you've got to treat them with respect, and you've got to give them some ownership, you know, because, you know, there's been plenty of people who have assisted me that didn't want paying, that were just happy to be involved with it and loved being involved with a successful situation because it was their I guess decompression from their normal life,
yeah,
you know, and their normal jobs, you know. I you know one of my best and most respected assistants that I had was a guy called Dave Taylor at Sheffield, that who I coached his kid back in the mid 2000s, you know, 2000s, probably 10, 15 years ago. And she dropped out and he stayed helping me for another 10, 12 years.
Wow.
And the reason he did it was because he was an engineer that was, you know, working hard during the day. And this was his decompression. This was the time that he was able to really enjoy being, you know, around athletes and all that type of thing.
Yeah.
So I would regularly give him responsibility to write sessions, and I would perhaps just give him an outline of things so that he could experience that feeling of a little bit of ownership, you know. And those people are absolute diamonds, you know. They're in every swimming club, right? You know, every swimming club has got a Dave, you know. And then obviously, I think it, you know, you've got to take it really, really seriously and make sure that your assistants are getting opportunities, you know, to do CPD. And so I think that, you know, we all should have a bit of a budget within our overall budget to make sure that our assistants get a chance to go to conferences and go and see other programs and that they're looked after, you know. And a little bit of respect goes a real, real long way. You know, you go up to somebody and say, put your arm around them and say, do you know what? Thanks so much for what you do. I couldn't do what I do without you.
Mm.
And you've got them for another year.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because It makes them feel so great, you know. And I think you've got to take time and effort into nurturing those relationships. You can't just take it for granted that they'll always just be there.
Mm.
You know, because a lot of the time they're there because of the relationship that they've got with you and the respect that they have for you and the respect that they have for the athletes. And so if you treat them well and the athletes treat them well and look after them, they'll stay around because they love it. It makes them feel good.
Yeah.
It gives them a reason to get up every day, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so I think, yeah, you need to make sure you look after them and talk to them, treat them with respect and make sure that they've got CPD appropriate to what they want, you know. And we certainly did that, and I still do, you know.
Perfect. Awesome. So coming towards the end of the episode here, and always ask my guests for top three tips on something. Now I'm going to ask you today, Russ, for your top three tips on implementing a performance culture within a club environment.
Wow. Okay. I would probably say that just to remind yourself, you know, the key thing is that behavior is infectious. Right. That, you know, so if I think I read recently somewhere that a child's socialization process is generally an accumulation of the five people that they spend the most time with. So if you think about that, we'll be one of those people.
Yeah.
And so we've got to make sure that the behaviors that we instill on our decks, on our pool sides, within our sessions, are the right ones to make sure that we're developing well-rounded individuals as well as well-rounded athletes. And so I think that my first one probably would be that. It would be that to remember we're developing people and that good athletes will come out of that. And so we've got to make sure that the behaviours and the morals and the principles and the characters that we're building are the right ones. And so that's the first thing I would say. Probably the second one probably is the hard work thing, you know, because we know that progression comes from adaptations. And we know that the harder you work, the more adaptations you're going to have. The more adaptations you have, the better you're going to taper. And the better you taper, the faster you're going to go, right?
Yeah.
You know? So I know it sounds really simplistic and it's a little bit more complicated than that. But we've got to remember all the time that we've got to be looking for progression.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got to look at what we do. You know, we've got to make sure that the things that we're doing are progressive, you know, and that that it's challenging and challenging enough that people are going to get tired. And then when they do get tired, to pat him on the back and say, oh, wow, you've gone into an adaptation. That's fantastic. That means you've worked really hard. Great stuff. Well done. You'll feel fantastic in a couple of weeks when you come out the other end. Rather than, oh, are you tired? No, or let's just back off a bit then. You know, and it's like, even though that might be in your nature, you know, because we all, you know, none of us like being challenging particularly. But we know that without that challenge, people aren't going to get adaptations. And so we've got to be prepared to push to the line and occasionally past it, maybe sometimes. But I'll say that in inverted commas. You know, and I think that, again, I think that's really, really important. And I think probably the last one is maybe a little bit of empathy, probably is a really important thing, you know, that put yourself in the shoes of the person that you're dealing with, you know, and make sure that you can say, look, I know what you want and it's what I want too, and we're going to do this together as partners. You know, rather than these are my non-negotiables and I'm going to lead from the front, banging my shield, and if you don't like it, you can clear off. You know, that's very 1970s, isn't it? You know, you know, I think that what we've got, we can do it these days, and we can get people to work really hard and work, make people push to and past the line from time to time. But we do it by taking them on the journey with us and getting their input and making sure that we understand where they're coming from and that we're getting inside their head from time to time and really, really, you know, doing it as a team, doing it as a partnership, you know. Yeah. Because when those things are misaligned, when, you know, when your motivation and drive and all that sort of stuff is higher than your athletes, it's a mismatch that's either going to stifle them or break them or break you, or it's... You know, it's a mismatch that's going to end badly, and it's going to be an even worse result if they're aligned the other way.
Yeah,
the athlete's ambitions are greater than yours. So I think getting that level of empathy and understanding and commitment, so that you're aligned, and then you take it upwards together. You know, I think that's the key to it, because you're not fighting then. You know, you're in the same war together, right?
Yeah,
you know, and. And it's so much better when you do it as a group and as a team.
Perfect. So, Russ, thanks so much for your time. It's been great to have you back on the podcast. Obviously, I know you've got the project up and running with the Swim Coach Network. Do you want to share some of the details for that? And if you've got any listeners that aren't yet involved with that, how they can get involved?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Basically, it's just I think we're on Facebook, we're on LinkedIn, we're on Twitter, and basically anybody that wants to be part of the group, it's free of charge. You know, we just ask, you know, random people that are involved in sport. You know, tends to be, you know, high performing coaches or land coaches or psychologists, you know, physios, that type of thing. And we, you know, we talk about the latest thinking and words of wisdom. And anybody that wants to join in live on those conversations can join in live. They'll get a Zoom link. But anybody that just wants to be part of the network and get the recording sent through to them, if they just send me an email and I'll register them into the group. And so it's the swim network at outlook.com.
Perfect.
Think about that one then.
Yeah. I'll make sure that's included within the show notes as well. So, you know, if you're listening, just check out the show notes if you're interested in that network as well. And you can send an email direct to Russ and he can set you up on that.
But no, in all seriousness, you know, to blow a little bit of hot air up your backside, well done for what you're doing as well. It's excellent. You know, I enjoy your podcast personally and you know, make sure anyone's listening supports what you're doing as well, because it's really, really good. So let's support the Poolside Pass as well.
Perfect. Thank you, Russ. Listeners, thank you for listening to this episode of the Poolside Pass. You know, I hope you found it insightful and useful. You know, there's certainly quite a few golden nuggets of information there that I was scribbling down as Russ was going. If you enjoyed this episode and you want to listen to some more, check us out. We're on our website at www.thepoolsidepass.com. We're also on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at The Poolside Pass. Make sure you share that around other coaches that you know. Until next time, take care.